I could look people in the eye and be like, I promise I will make you a very successful business person.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly difficult to create quality, in-depth content while running a business. I think you can't claim being a creator unless you are committed to a cadence. Consistency does win. You can have an off month or two, a hard season of life, but you just keep showing up and no one else does. You still win.
That's a really good answer.
Quality will always win. I like deeply believe that. Learn how to say no. No to advertisers. No to clients. No, 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 no. All the mistakes you'll end up making are the moments that you should have said no.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today, we are speaking with Adam Ryan, who is probably one of the best business minds in newsletter world. He made his name in the space really at The Hustle, which he joined as the first salesperson, driving the monetization strategy, and then he left 4 years later as president. He's also been an advisor to a number of other successful newsletter-first businesses like 6AM City and Every, but chiefly right now, and this is why we're talking to him, he is the CEO and co-founder of Workweek, a newsletter-led platform for professional networks, which we've also, longtime listeners will know, we've had a couple former Workweekers on the pod before, Tommy Clark and Jared Deshevsky. Adam, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Longtime fan, so thanks for, and many, many, many mutuals in the space. So appreciate inviting me and coming on.
I guess for the listeners, quick, we should say, so like basically there's Workweek is kind of a studio. We'll get into more like the other businesses later. But in that, like you guys do create these businesses, it's a distribution first product studio or like brand studio, I would say, to an extent.
Yeah. So the way that we kind of, and I think this is like an evolution of the business. We're only 3 years. We turned three last week. So we've had lots of descriptions of us.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, there was a time period where we were thinking about, hey, similar to like what Knight was doing with Mr. Beast, like how can we build products? I think that's just like not a sustainable business. I think we've had a lot of lessons and learnings, but you know, for us, going content to SaaS is possible. We still have a really great vertical franchise SaaS business. It's kind of crazy. But the thing that gets forgotten in a lot of those models and that we realized is like there's competition everywhere. And so if we're dividing our attention up, someone else isn't.
Wi-Fi on 10 fronts.
Yeah. And so, you know, what we've really focused on and started to hone in on is how do we, what we call kind of build these like professional networks, which, you know, memberships and a pet piece of those memberships is this community front. And it's way more natural for all of our content creators that have a huge relationship in their industries and their professions to have these professional memberships. And that's really where a lot of our efforts been headed. And, you know, for the talent, the big piece of that Workweek is solving is the ability to focus on what they know how to do. And so I, you know, really try not to ask people to basically do anything that they don't, that I don't believe that they're best at because they're best at something else. And I think, you know, putting people in positions they're born to do was what we wrote down originally. And, and then making sure that they're compensated fairly for that is the other
side. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like this is true of any creative industry, but like, I think with the creator economy, with creators, it's like, you're either really good at the creative aspect and like, you know, the production, the writing, the filming, whatever, being on camera, or you're really good at like the business, the structure, the ad sales, whatever. Most people are generally, I think, only good at like kind of one side or the other. Some people are really good at both or know how to hire for both.
I don't even think about it as good because I think, you know, we work in the B2B space. All of our creators are so good at business as well, right?
But like doing, like they don't have the time maybe, right, to do both.
I kind of talk about it as energy giving or energy taking. And so what takes their energy is like, hey, I don't want to send 10 cold emails. I could. I know how to. I've done that before. I don't want to do that. And, you know, part of like putting people in positions they're born to do is not just from a skill set, but from a desire. And that's really like why, you know, we really hone in on that early is like, hey, if someone like wants to go sell ads and they believe that's where like what they love to do, we're probably not a good fit for them. Cause like, it's a, you know, we have 20 people focusing on that. So, that's the, there's a lot of this energy giving and energy taking conversation.
How big, you don't have to say exact numbers, but like the average creator, is there like a subscriber count that, or like, I don't know. I know like it's right. It's not about how many subscribers, it's about who they are, et cetera, which is really the focus for you guys because it is B2B. But is there kind of like a sweet spot range or something like that?
So I think about it in two terms is one, what's the total addressable market of our like core audience mm-hmm. we're going after? So, you know, on our healthcare side, Blake is, I think, like the best analyst in the country for the niche that he covers.
Yeah.
It's basically for healthcare system strategists. And maybe there's 25,000 of those people in the United States.
Highly specific.
Very highly specific group of people. You know, HR with kind of directors and up of who we're going mm-hmm. after, startup scale ups, maybe company size 25 to 1,000. Maybe there's 110,000 of those people. Mm-hmm. So what I track, what I care about and kind of like have conversations about is like, how are we tracking towards capturing that audience specifically? And that's, you know, our data team is almost as big as our creator team and to make sure we can answer those questions. And then the second one is we map that out. How much money do we think we can make and on each brand, and where are we at towards that progress?
Mm-hmm. How are you growing the audiences for each of them? If some of them come in not really having made content before, is it like paid advertising? What are the main levers you're pulling?
Yeah. Paid advertising. We're pretty active on social. We support them on social and paid advertising. You know, first 6-9 months, it's very heavy paid advertising. Once we feel like we have like a content market fit and that ICP nailed down, like, you know, we would do things differently. Of course, you learn at something new for each launch. But in an ideal process, we kind of identify the area that we want to go after. Then we identify the talent we go after. How many, and then how many of those people exist, and then, you know, start to put it in. And I think there's a lot of negative connotation around paid advertising to grow newsletters. And I think it's because people skip the content market fit piece and they skip of the who they're going after piece. And so we try to make sure to check both of those boxes. And I think, you know, Morning Brew and The Hustle, they can put out, Morning Brew can say whatever they want, but I'm pretty sure if I had to guess, 90%+ of their subs were from paid ads.
Well, it's such a classic ad format now, like 5 minutes a day, learn everything you need to know about business or whatever. Right.
Yeah. So I think that's the but just doing it, it's gotten harder because more competition, but doing it smart is actually still a really good opportunity to scale those.
What do you think is a really like, what are some of the least effective growth levers you think? I mean, I know it like it's different for every person, et cetera, but like, is there anything you guys have tried where you're like, I would just stay away from that now?
So I think if you're only an ads based business, like forever, like if you're an individual creator, and you're like, I'm just going to use programmatic ads like through the Beehive network, I think referral systems like not great.
It's a little saturated too.
It's saturated. It doesn't actually do much from a quantity perspective. And you're not really getting rewarded for those. You're not rewarding and taking advantage of those fans. Like if you had a product downstream, an event or something like big ticket that you were using to take advantage of these people that have referred 3 or 4 or 5 people, even if it's only 20 of those people, you know, if you have like some, a big ticket item, sell that group, then that's actually a pretty interesting group to like go after and go target and identify. Yeah. If you're just doing programmatic ads or something like that, then I think that channel's not just saturated, but just doesn't produce the ROI that people think it does.
Yeah. What about the content itself? I know it's like different people doing different types of content for different niches, but like, is there any like trends you notice that like, oh, these types of issues are really performant when they're formatted like this, it's really performant. People love them. The engagement's really high. Have you learned anything about that?
So every audience is different. And I think that's like actually the line there is like, I think formulaic content advice gets pretty shitty results. So I think that's number one. I think that's what also, you know, what we try to lean into at Workweek is like, that's also why having the creator be their ideal customer is the winning ticket. Cause if that HR person's like, hey, this is how I would want it. I would want like exclamation points. And I want like,
they're going to know better than anybody.
Yeah. They're going to know. All right. If it's like, hey, I'm in healthcare and I want like graphs and every data point needs like a graph, it's like, they know already. So I think just, you know, being close to your customer, ideally as the creator, but like either way, that's actually the way to find that answer.
Yeah. So I want to move on to some other things, but last thing, I do want to talk about all the different businesses. So like going back, I went through years of your Twitter. I went through years of Workweek's Twitter, et cetera, other things. I don't know if these are all still going, but at different points, there's been a ghostwriting agency you guys acquired. There's a recruiting business. You throw events, notably Marketing Land. There's Crockett, which is a franchise business management tool. And then there's the professional networks themselves and attached to, of course, the newsletters themselves, which, you know, you sell ads. Is that the full extent of everything you're doing? And are you still doing all those things?
So our ghostwriting agency, we built actually a tool that we still have some clients for sure, which is interesting. Like a lot of our advertising clients use that ghostwriting tool. But we actually use that internally. That's like how our team helps manage our creators. And so we have a Chrome extension. There's like just a tool that we built off of that. The hiring we don't do anymore. And I can talk about like what the learnings there. Crockett, we don't put any additional resources into. It is still live. And surprisingly, you know, I think I just looked like we did like added like 4K MRR this month or something.
Oh, nice.
But we did that. And then Marketing Land, we still do. And then almost all of our efforts is around scaling our ads business.
That's the core.
Through technology, as well as building out these professional network memberships. And we built our own platform for that completely for each one, and you know, integrating all those into one piece.
Yeah. Are there any other like initiatives or projects you're currently working on, or is it kind of like you said, it's all we're all ads, the rest we're kind of not putting as much resources to at the moment?
Well, so like our memberships has ads and subscriptions is kind of how it runs. And you know, the North Star of that is really like, we think, you know, we have a feed in that platform. You know, we want to create, social network for each profession that we're in.
Yes, which I really like. This was kind of something you launched this summer alongside a series A funding, right?
Yeah, correct. And it is damn difficult to launch a social network, more or less five of them. So all of our energy is there right now compared to a lot of those other things.
Yeah. Adam as creator. So you are listed on the website as one of Workweek's creators. You have this newsletter called Perpetual. Looking at the archive, I don't know if it's been like a year since you published or if you've kept publishing and I just haven't seen them. And then you also have a podcast by the same name. And then again, I think it was again on Jacob Donnelly's podcast, you said you didn't identify as a writer and you never had. And I'm sure that disconnect kind of expands to podcaster and creator more broadly. But I'm interested to hear how you think of Adam as a creator.
I wish I was better at it. So the kind of background and context, and I've kind of explained this, I explained this to Jacob, but when we were going to market, you know, I could look people in the eye and be like, I promise I will make you a very successful business person through what we know how to do. But to like really have a true relationship and to give that like harsh feedback, right? Sometimes you like have to have this like empathy that I didn't have yet and perspective of like, what is it like to have a deadline? What is it like to have an advertiser like ask you to do shit that you don't
want to
do?
You have to walk the path yourself.
You have to walk it. And so on launch day, we launched myself as a creator talking about the media industry. And it was really I could go through our own motions and see what it was like and kind of treat myself in our own system and eat my own dog food. And I published a weekly newsletter that was like on average a few thousand words. It was like a pretty in-depth essay every week. I did my podcast and got all my dream guests on at one point. So like I did it, the reality is it's just incredibly difficult to create quality in-depth content while running a business.
Yeah, well, this goes back to the desire thing when we were talking about the creators earlier. It's like your desire is to run the business, not to create the content.
Yeah. And Jacob Donnelly and I are good friends. Brian Morrissey and I, you know, talk quite a bit, and like, those guys are great. I think there was there was a gap, and there's still like a gap. I give Jacob a hard time about this, and like the media industry of talking about tactics, but like in-depth tactics. But I think that I touched on a lot. But yeah, my energy wasn't from that. Now, I will say I do an internal newsletter weekly that I send to the company.
But that's, again, that's the desire of running the business. Yeah. That's to run the business.
Correct. And so, you know, it's called Top of Mind, and I send it every Sunday, and I love writing that. But so it's that. But that was the main reason, is I wanted to put myself through our own process. And, you know, we ran paid ads. We did the whole thing just to see how it would work. And I had, you know, and then once I felt good about that system and process, I kind of started to pull back and back.
Yeah.
And now the podcast I went really heavy on this year again. I still think, you know, podcasting is the best way to network and meet people.
Yeah.
Even if you hate it. And so I loved, in Q1, I went hard and, you know, talked to the founder of South by Southwest because I wanted to get in there and like a bunch of other things. But the newsletter's been at least a year since I published.
Yeah. It was last September. To be exact. How do you define the term creator? This is something I always ask people. I'm always interested to see the slight nuances in people's answers.
That's a great question. I think on like a 30,000 foot overview, it's anyone producing content at a consistent sort of cadence. Mm. I think you can't claim being a creator unless you are committed to a cadence.
Yeah, I really like that. One of the ways I think about it too is like it's about audience. It's about, you're producing it for an audience of people other than your friends and family, other than people you know in real life. But I hadn't thought of the consistency. I always say like the only, talking earlier about like you know, hard to give generalized advice for this kind of thing, or say like, oh, here's how content should look like. Like, I think the only advice that really matters is like post, analyze, tweak, repeat, and that's all it is, right?
Yeah. And I think like, you know, I like operating these like niche spaces because sometimes just like consistency does win. You can have an off month or two, a hard season of life, but you just keep showing up and no one else does. You still win. There. And so I think cadence matters a lot. And I think like the commitment to that is like what gives the title of creator to me. And also phonies like myself that stop is like what makes you lose that, I think. Yeah. Right. So I think that's the key. I think you could talk about like intention a little bit too. I don't think marketers are creators. I think when you're like creating content for the sole purpose of selling something, you're not a creator, you're a marketer.
And so I also think with this, that a marketer like myself, you know, my full disclosure is that like Beehive pays my salary and Beehive supports this, and like, so I think I can't be a creator, because I think to be a creator you have to be solo, you have to be like not solo, but you have to be independent, you have to be essentially working for a mix of yourself, the audience, and then if you're, you know, on a platform like YouTube or another of these revenue share platforms, you're essentially working for YouTube too. But if you're doing all those exact things and you're like you know, a content person at a company, and you're making YouTube videos, Instagram, TikTok, newsletter, whatever, you're doing all that, but a company pays your salary, I don't think you're a creator. You have the same skills as them, but you lack the risk and precarity and particular motivations.
See, I don't make creator around entrepreneurship. I don't think it's a signal of entrepreneurship. Like I go back to like, let's like think about what's been existing. Like I absolutely believe, to go to like the Friends example, like they're creators. Yeah. They like create amazing art, and they do it consistently. They get paid by NBC. That doesn't make them not that. And I think HubSpot's another good example. Like it's not that ultimately that content's not meant to drive sales for HubSpot, but I actually think like the spirit of what people are creating there, on that like media arm of HubSpot is like, they just are trying to actually like do good, solid work. And they're doing it for this like audience, to your point, not to necessarily, they're not producing something and being like, if we didn't sell this, we fucking messed up.
I think of it as like, you're just contributing to the corpus of the internet broadly.
Yeah.
It's also in that.
And like, I don't think you hang up, you know, a pod and, you know, and say, oh, we got no Beehive leads off of this ad. It was a failure of a podcast.
No,
right?
That's not really the point.
Yeah. And so I think actually you are a creator then in that sense. It's about, I think, the intention. Yeah. I think the difference is if you ask a marketer, you're like, what's the intention of this? They're like, well, I better sell something.
Yeah.
Or like
leads.
Or, you know, I want to like change the mind and influence for my product, whatever. If you ask a creator, it's like, I'm trying to create valuable content.
Yeah.
And I'm like doing it I'm doing it really for them, not for me.
That's a really good answer. This, I feel like I've been recently when I've asked people, we've kind of gotten stuck in the same things. Nobody's ever really pushed back so much on the like, you know, if you're employed by a company thing. So I like that. I want to go back to much earlier in your life when you were a campus rep for HP, Procter & Gamble.
You went back.
And Red Bull. Yeah, well, that's my job. You know, that's what you got to do
ago.
To create that good content. But I'm interested in this because, like, you know, I just read to, you know, full disclosure, I just read your LinkedIn. It's on your LinkedIn there. You have a really nice, thorough LinkedIn. But to me, there's like a clear through line to what you do now. I don't know. You don't have to tell me every detail about, you know, slinging Red Bulls out of a Mini Cooper or whatever. But I'm curious, like, the through line of what you've done in your work that you like take from, you know, 15 years ago to now.
Yeah. I mean, my college experience had a huge influence of like what I'm doing today. First off, I you know, my story is, my mom was a nurse for 35 years. My dad worked at a grocery store and then got into real estate, but both didn't have an undergrad degree. And when I was doing my summer welcome, we were walking past the business school and my mom was like, what do people do with business degree? And I was like, I have no clue.
Yeah, hell if I
know. And that's how I became a teacher. I got my undergrad in education. I got my master's in education and I love teaching. I love that aspect. My master's in workforce education, focusing on adults. And it's so much of what I do today is coaching. And that's really where that comes from.
But, makes so much sense.
But in college, I needed money. And I always kind of like was coming up with little side hustles and rackets that were mostly like marketing based. And I would sell like t-shirts and design them and stuff like that, like classic kind of freshman year stuff. And I saw an internship for Procter & Gamble to be the Old Spice kind of campus representative of how could you come up with, you know, funny, clever marketing campaigns, kind of peak Old Spice advertising at the time. And, you know, I did all sorts of stuff. I did like bathroom makeovers at gross fraternity houses where like I hired a cleaner to come in and actually make it like really nice and then like put like soap everywhere.
And these were like your ideas, not like passed down marketing
ideas. They were my ideas and I kind of led that off there. And then I got promoted there to oversee multiple brands. So I had Cheer and Old Spice, one of the shaving companies, like the razors for women. And so at Cheer, I went around and asked all the fraternities if they could ask their pledges to dress one day in like neon colors. And I would like basically pay them for like a night of beer. And so one day, like the whole campus was running around in like neon colors and I gave away like Cheer. There's like fun stuff like that. And then I left there to go to Red Bull. And that was really where my mind was open up about brand. At that time with P&G, it was mostly like, just like come up with crazy shit. You have this like budget that's really low. Just like be fun and be creative. Red Bull was like, got taken into the Red Bull like school, the do's and don'ts of the brand. How can you present the, like all the stuff. And then, you know, the Mini Coopers was a separate thing. It's actually like a totally different team, but you know,
well, this is also, there's such a speaking of like the Disney model and like that drawing of all the businesses connecting, like Red Bull's another modern master.
Perfect
that, right?
Example. Yeah. They're the best. Yeah. I mean, they're, and I, you know, I was exposed to just like one, like don't ever say no was like, that's where that was made as like, hey, we want to shut down the busiest street in the city and have people make like chariots and race them down there. How can we make it happen? And
yeah. Find the person to talk to.
I went to the town hall meeting like 12 times till the mayor would sign off on it. I had to get like exclusivity agreement with a bar to like sign. It was like crazy. That's insane. Like did crazy stuff. And you learned a lot about being like an entrepreneur through that. But also the brand values never went away. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like so much of what I carry with Workweek today. And what I like look for is like, what do you stand for? And like, it should exist in everything you do in subtle ways to like very obvious ways. And, you know, with Red Bull, it was like, hey, I had like a gaming group. I had like the, the nightclub group. I had the convenience store, which is more blue collar workers. Like we thought about different audiences and different ways and activations, and like, it's just, but the values never changed. And I think that was, there was so much there that I thoroughly enjoyed, and I made a lot of money relatively in college for that. And, my friends never had to buy a drink ever. And so it was a good place to be.
That's sick. No, I mean, there's a few things there, but one thing I'm really picking up on is what you're just saying at the end is like, you really taught you a lot about values driven businesses and like adhering to values and like how that is what allows you to grow. And like, that's like the tree trunk that, you know, makes everything solid around it. And I don't know, I think it makes decision-making easy. Like, you know, whether or not for you now, it's like, are we going to hire this creator or not? Like, they're not really about business. Our values are all about like serving business niches. We wouldn't hire them. I don't know. It's hard. I think it's a values driven business is easy and hard. It's hard to like, if you're faking it, it's hard, but it's really easy when the values are real.
Yeah. I mean, I just met with a creator today, a group of three guys, and they have a TikTok channel, I think, with like 8 million people. And I've been meeting with them since they were like 500,000 or something. They're incredible. Every part of me and every part of my body like wished I could work with them. And it's not what Workweek does. And so, you know, those are the things where your values are tested. And you're like, every part of me wants to say yes, because this group of people, like I've known from the beginning, they were going to be fucking stars.
Yeah.
And now they are. And I'm like, ah, but you just you also have to just totally believe in what you're doing. And I think the mature thing there that you learn, I think, when building businesses and even with creators, I think, you know, as they develop and grow, is like you learn opportunity cost. And like, you know, we parted ways with a lot of creators last November. And it wasn't, you know, there was some data reasons that drove that decision for sure across the board, but also it was the opportunity cost of like, on the flip side, we had like a group that was crushing, and I wanted to go all in on them. And every single resource I didn't have that was actually costing us on that opportunity. And so I think that's, as a creator, you also kind of tend to realize that too.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, how about, so the newsletter industry, I know you were working, you were doing some media stuff before the hustle too, but that's really where you start doing newsletter first media. So you've been working now in, you know, newsletter, like, oh, I see you kind of shaking your head. Were you doing newsletter stuff
before? I mean, newsletters have existed. I think it's like a kind of a bubble that we all live in today. Like, and I mean, newsletters were on like media plans, like, you know, Pop Sugar sold for $100 million in like 2000. So like, I think they've been around for a long time. No,
but you specifically working in them.
Spiceworks had newsletters. We had like a couple million people on those lists and that things, but it was a community. So it was different. But My Fitness Pal had a massive, massive newsletter list of people. But to your point, they weren't newsletter forward, which that was the big turning point.
That comes with Hustle, Skim, et cetera.
Was the hustle of being like, what is the new homepage? Was actually the question I was asking.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So then in the eight plus-ish years that you've been really working with newsletters, what are some of the most pronounced differences in the industry from your personal perspective?
From 8 years ago till today?
Yeah.
So before the hustle, I sold advertising. I had one client that did about $6.5 million with me in 1 year, is HP. And I like had a deep relationship with, you know, their management team and knew them really, really well enough where I was like, okay, this is who I'm going to bring in to the hustle pretty quickly. I will never forget it. My contact I've known this person. I knew her kids' names, right? Like, knew this person really well. And I sit down and I'm like, hey, I have a pitch for you. I took her out to breakfast and I was like, I have a pitch for you. I'm moving companies. This is what it is. It's, you know, think about the Daily Show, but for tech and business news. And then we're going to be in your inbox. Your inbox is your new homepage.
Yeah.
And, I was like, I have a 2-quarter proposal. So 6-month proposal for $100,000.
That's chump change compared to $6 million over the previous year.
I mean, I used to get calls from our last day of the quarter, be like, hey, I have $200,000 I have to spend today, or it gets taken from me the next quarter. Like, I was like, I expected to go down a little bit, but I was like, hey, let's just like start somewhere like that. And she's like, a newsletter? Really? And she's like, why a newsletter? And she's like, why don't you guys do like banner ads and like go do, you know, can I buy banner ads on the site? Like, what's your home? What's your page views? And I was like, holy shit. This is going to be harder than I thought. And today that doesn't exist. Those conversations, no one asks like why a newsletter anymore. That they get it. And so that shift, and you know, we watched it in real time happening. It's like these agencies started inbounding and like being putting in their annual plans of like, oh, we need to sponsor these newsletters. And I think like that shift is obviously is, in my opinion, is why the Beehives could exist today and not 8 years ago.
Totally.
Because the pool of dollars has just gotten so much larger that it's allowed more people to enter the space.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything like in the industry broadly, not necessarily like about Work Week, but like anything more in the space that worries you or like you kind of keep an eye, like a watchful eye on, you know?
I mean, I definitely think there's like huge risks to the email providers rolling up newsletters, which would be pretty detrimental. And I would expect a change like that. It's going to happen. Not all mediums last. They never do. And so, you know, something's going to happen that fundamentally shifts that behavior, that user behavior, whether it's a force function of the big players or just the world changes consumer habits. Something's going to happen. That's
some other shoe is going to drop.
It's going to happen. It might be in 20 years from now and none of us really care that much anymore. But it might be in 3 years. Like, we don't know. And so something that I think about like a lot of like, what is, you know, what, and I went through that, like basically 2016 was me being like, I think the page view business is done.
Yeah.
I'm out. And so, you know, just I'll,
you're waiting for the next version of that.
Yeah, I do. For sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think, these, and I say this about everybody, that does these like, you know, sign up for 5 emails at once by a checkbox. I think they're terrible for the industry. Because it gets into the page view business. It's the same thing. So that's the, that's one thing I think about. I think the other one is just, you know, it's not quality will always win. Brand always wins. So like, I'm not worried about that, but it will get more expensive to have quality stick out. And because marketers are simple people. And it used to be, hey, if this list was big, it meant it was the best. It's not the case anymore. It used to be open rate was great, but now some people do it.
That from this weekend when Daisy and I did the Tasteland Live event and we had people from, you know, these few worker owned journalism outlets. We had 404, Hellgate and Defector, people from each of those. And at the end, we let the audience ask a couple questions, and Adam Bumas, who's the researcher for Garbage Day, Ryan Broderick's newsletter, asked about like, well, do you guys like, are you competing with creators? How do you think about that? And Sam Cole from 404 was like, and they all kind of said a version of this, like, I don't really think of that. Like, I think we're doing different things, which, you know, I think there's room for debate there. But then Max from Hellgate was like, well, I think the difference is like, you know, these newsletters, really, they don't have an editor. You can really tell, like, the quality isn't necessarily there. There's not like the polishing of having an editor, of having other people in the newsroom pushing these ideas. I don't know if that gets at like what you're saying about like quality will always win. And like when the zone is a little flooded, quality is lower. But I that's something I've been thinking about since he said that.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Which is a problem you guys solve at Work Week, because there is this team, and I imagine there is editorial collaboration, and like, even between the creators and, you know, between the team and the creators, I imagine there's that kind of polish being put on the content.
So actually not.
Everyone's pretty solo.
So and I'll tell you why. It's a philosophical approach, not like an operational one. So one, we have Lindsay Quinn, who was the managing editor from November of 2016 until basically 2020 at The Hustle. She ran the whole thing every day, saw it over 6 days a week. She's incredible. So she's our content coach, and she's helping everyone get better at writing. The craft is real. Yeah. But there's, you know, and this is my opinion, and I think there's a lot of counterpoints to this that I totally buy into. It's just kind of where I'm at on the B2B side is, you know, when we wrote our first memo, I talked about this essentially the evolution of a tire. and how 30 years ago you had to wear a suit and tie, and that's how you found credibility with someone. Yeah. And if you showed up to a meeting in, you know, a t-shirt and sneakers, they'd be like, who the fuck is this person? Today, that doesn't exist. You can be actually really almost more credible in some ways.
You go Zuck mode.
If you go Zuck mode versus like showing up to a suit and tie. And I think in B2B content, we're on that same horizon where actually if you can be like succinct and do it in a meme and do it like fucking hits, you actually have more credible with people like, oh, they get it. Versus like this like very long, you know, multi.
Well, the attire is the sender. The attire is the name of the creator. It's the Twitter handle. It's whatever, you know. It's
and the style as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I personally, I tell this to the creators all the time. One of our values is press publish, don't be perfect.
Yeah.
And a typo means you're human. And like today, that's actually more important than like ever before. And I don't care about a typo. Yeah. Like it needs to be clear and concise and understanding. But like, it's okay if you like make a mistake on the format. It's okay if it's not polished actually, because like polished is what's now.
It's about the idea, not the vessel. I mean, it's still about the vessel, but the vessel can look different as long as the idea is the core.
The insight is what actually matters in delivery, right? And like, and so that's how we think about this polished, just to go on that like rant. Yeah. That's how I think about polished is actually like unpolished is polished in a way. But what I mean by quality standing out is it just like ultimately what people forget, there's only two ways to make money with content. It's ads or consumer subscriptions, essentially, you know, and most of it is ads. So how does a marketer make a decision? They normally look at like, it's like looking at a resume. Someone looks at the brand for like 1 second, like, and you look for the key thing that you care about. And it used to just be like in 2018, once we started like growing well, it used to be like, oh, wow, they have 1 million subs. Only like three other companies do. They got to
be the best. They're the winner. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you look at open rate maybe as like a second glimpse, quick thing. Mm-hmm. Today, both those metrics basically are meaningless. So like no marketer trusts those anymore. And what I mean by the thing that I think about and I'm worried about is then, how do the best newsletters that deserve a 4x premium of CPM and deserve like the actual high brand get in front of those marketers in a way that stands out?
Is it first party data?
I mean, for us, we invited all of our top advertisers to an event in person. We called our Upfronts event in September, and we flew them all to Austin and got to sit down with them and explain, you know, our content process, the product, like meet the creators. I mean, like
it's hard to get more real than that.
Yeah. Right. But I actually think that's the era we're in. Yeah. And so, you know, but like that's more expensive than it used to be. And so that's that to me, you know, I think quality will always win. I like deeply believe that. But like the time to get in front of advertising, I think we're going to see this huge disparity. And, you know, I talked to Daisy about this a lot of dirt. Yeah. Like I think their quality is the fucking best. And they struggle at times with advertising because it's just not correlated as much as it used to be. And so you have to like that. That, I think, is a concern for the industry kind of at large.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Some other newsletters that you have advised, I don't think you're currently advising all of them. I mentioned some of these at the beginning, 6 a.m. City, Every, Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. I think these are all other newsletters or newsletter businesses that, you know, speak to that kind of quality we're just talking about. Tell me about, and I imagine that these are just the ones that were on your LinkedIn page. Again, I think there's probably some others that aren't. Tell me about what these relationships are like and how you're helping them. And are you reaching out to them or are they reaching out to you?
Local newsletters, I love them so much. You know, Daisy, Payload Space, I did before launch. Every Dan and Nathan I talked with, you know, early days as well. And, you know, I hoped to give them any insights I could about, you know, building monetization strategies, newsletter growth strategies, et cetera, and correlating that. But the reason why I really worked with all of them is because they all had a very content forward approach. And I think the thing that I left after the hustle that I could see happening, and Beehive has amplified this problem because it's democratized access, which is amazing. But the problem's been amplified where there's more shortcuts. And if this is why Workweek exists the way that we set it up, is like, I think ultimately you have to have the best content. And what all those people had in common is they just deeply cared about the content. They didn't even care about the business in some way, in some cases. And I try to help them in those capacities. And, you know, Matthew Berry just, I mean, the man lives and dies fantasy football content.
Yeah.
I read it. I love it. They needed support on, hey, how do we think about larger advertising sales and six-figure, seven-figure deals? They were doing like a House of Brands model at the time. Yeah. How do we like think about that? So I just always would help that. I think like ultimately those are relationships that my kind of goal is I try to help them avoid a landmine or two that I've stepped in. Yeah. And that can be helpful. But also just to be an advocate for them anywhere I can be.
Those landmines, are there one or two of those kind of landmines that you would, you know, for more of the indie, more, I don't know if entry level, but like still lower scale newsletter operator who might be listening to this, what are some of the main landmines you would suggest avoiding?
Learn how to say no. I mean, and no to advertisers, no to clients, no to no. One, nothing sells sexier than no. So like, yeah, it doesn't mean you don't get a yes. It means you just have the leverage.
Yeah.
And so say no, more, but also that comes with focus and time. Like, try to choose the thing that gives you the most energy that you love and do it. And like, that sounds like not advice. It sounds obvious, but actually all the mistakes you will make.
Well, it's so hard to know when to say no. And this comes back to the values driven business stuff we're talking about.
Right. And like, but all the mistakes you'll end up making are the moments that you should have said no. And so that's like the top stuff, to do. And, you know, you'll find points where you're like, hey, I'm going to say yes here. But like, then if you do, and you know, I talked to our sales team about this early days, like there's deals you just have to say yes to keep the lights on. Right. Like, yeah, you're like, I don't love this. Like, we have a block list where we don't work with advertisers that we don't like. But like early days, that list was pretty limited because, yeah, like we just needed money.
You can't say no because you have to say no to the lights turning off.
Right. Right. And so, you know, but then draw that line. Like, you know, that's still like in your values, but be like, hey, once we get to this goal, no more of that. And like that ability and that focus and that mission and keeping to those values, but just being able to also, you know, say no, all of a sudden all your work compounds.
Yeah.
And I think that's the mistake, the landmines I've stepped in, is you don't create a system and process that compounds, then you actually become pretty disparate and nothing 3 years in feels like it's huge.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. One more, another pedantic question. Just like I asked, what is a creator? What is a newsletter?
It's a format of content that can be consumed within a single sitting, delivered on some sort of consistent cadence.
That's really good. That's a tight definition. My latest definition that I'd used was an email sent one to many that's not a transactional email.
See, I'm old. Newsletters can still be in the mail, my friend. Physical mail.
That's true. That's true.
You start having friends send their holiday newsletters. So it's a real thing.
Come on, you're not that old.
I got friends that send me their annual holiday newsletter of their family in the mail. But I think the key, I don't talk about intent there because like I do think that's like too hard. Yeah, I think the key thing with definition of a newsletter is like what it solved originally is what the homepage solved, which is like, I can quickly get this. I can consume it fairly fast, like in one sitting, and it's consistently kind of there. I think that difference of these transactional emails and this is where I like go back and forth. Like, I used to say all the content, like, and I think actually maybe I would say that, like, you can consume, like I have a hard time calling emails that just have 30 fucking links in them newsletters.
Okay. Well, there has to be some commentary or something.
Well, like I used to say, you know, at the Hustle early days, it was like, we used to just like tell us that everybody was like 100% of the attention in the email, unless it's the ad. Like we were so minimal with link outage, and that was on purpose. And like until we
don't give anybody an off ramp to somewhere you don't want them to go.
Yeah, exactly. So like attention in that format is one of the things that I think is like an updated potential way to think about newsletters, is like, where is their attention going? But like, realistically, it's just a format, and how you choose that attention is like up to you. But people that like just use it as a link out is, I think, a different, it's a different type of a newsletter for sure than probably most of your listeners have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we could talk about that bit for probably another hour, but one actual final question. So you are just over now 3 weeks or 3 years into Workweek. Where do you want it to be at the 5-year mark?
You know, I hope that we become this like third home, for the professions that we have. I think we built a lot of habit. I talk about hits and habits a lot in content. Mm. Are you in the hits business or the habits business? I'm in a habits business. The newsletters are great for habit building. But the next thing I want to do is build the home, where if you're in HR, you have your work Slack, you have your like friend text, and then you have safe space. Our membership for HR, you know, healthcare, market, kind of go down the line. And really, I think, and by the 5-year point, I think for the ones that we're building today, we can achieve that in the next 2 years.
Nice. Cool. Well, that's it. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I'll maybe look forward to doing it again.
Absolutely. This has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. I'll see you next week.